The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
Look out! Because here it comes. I thought I saw it coming. I just had this ringing in my ears that said, here it comes. I know I hear it. I know it's on the way. Here it comes, and I'm telling you, in this event, in that event, and in all events, certainly in this event, what is it? I think it's this way. In that case, in this case, and in every case, coming up, probably one of the more serious things I ever did in my life, without my pants. So come on, everyone, you will be there. And we will be there with you when you are there. What is it?
Cthulhu Crackles.
Things fall apart indeed. I tell ya. Godfather of Internet Radio, right here, weathering the technical storm with you, Cthulhu Chronicles. Who knows? The third man, the Bard of Broadcasting. And the most confused man ever to touch a mixer. Let's get organized here. Come on. It's just impossible to me. Why? You don't know what? Well, you don't know what's happening. You, if it's good, it's good. Thank you. Stay with us. Charles Dennis is here. Brent Hoff. Ken Delgado and, who knows? Maybe Marlon Brando will drop by. I have no idea. Okay. From Ice Cap to Ice Cap, from Hamlet to City, from Othello and into every bordello. I want to tell you something. If what I'm going through, if you can hear and everything's fine, that's good, because the sound problems that accumulate through the weeks are just confounding. I have no idea why things suddenly work differently when nothing is touched. Now, something was touched. One or two things were touched, but I don't know how one thing affects another. That's what it is with virtual equipment. How does one thing affect another? And yet we're talking about analog inputs, and I don't know. This is why the Bard of Broadcasting comes to you, okay? So that you can understand that no matter what happens in this wild, wacky world of communications, we will indeed still communicate. And tonight, big communications with Charles Dennis and some new Charles Dennis associates. We're going to be doing that briefly, shortly, and with the questions, answers, a certain amount of communication. And I'm going to try to get to do what I always do, which is get through the adversity, overcome the adversity, and just move right into the things that we have to do perfectly. I don't have a lot to go into here other than, because, you know, when you're thrown off, you know, you come on stage and, you expect it. Let's say it's slippery. You had no idea. You rehearsed? I don't rehearse, of course. But I mean, you come out and suddenly the floor is slippery and you've got to remember your lines. You've got to be able to act with your lines. You can't just recite them. Oh, I just came in. It's dark outside. No, you have to act. Okay. And then suddenly for some strange reason, and it wasn't there before, a condition is different. Now you have to work as well as you can and display your talents or do whatever it is you do as well as you can, regardless of the altered situation. That's a pain in the butt. That makes you want to find a comfy chair, sit down, pick up a good book. And there are lots of good books out there too. Our guest, Charles Dennis, has written a few, and you can look him up at, you know it. I got a card. What is this? I never saw this before. Skype sent you a card. Screw Skype and your card. You know, this could be one of the reasons there's a problem. It could be Skype. It could be the Google Plus, because, yeah, you know, it might be that too. That's the only different thing. We do this thing on Tuesday nights through Four Culture Radio and Four Culture. No, it's not, it's radio, but it's live on YouTube. And we do this thing from Four Culture Magazine called Four Thought. And it picks up a cam from Google Plus, picked up by the artist D over there, picks it up, sends it over. Wonder what, why do we get a card from Skype? Is that, what is it, my birthday with Skype? I love that. Congratulations on your anniversary over at LinkedIn. Congratulations on your anniversary. Nice of people to think of me, but why? What is that? What anniversary? The anniversary of being on LinkedIn? Whoopee, whoopee, whoopee. I heard from Brock LaRob, by the way, speaking of books and stuff, you know, his books are still out there. Everybody's books are still out there. Brock LaRob's going to be on one of these weeks. We're going to get him going as soon as he settles in Florida. I think he moved to Florida. Oh, I'm sorry, Floridians. I've been hearing too much of this. I don't like Florida, but I'll come by and say hi now and then if somebody pays for it, you know, and I could, you know, go without the burden of having to do work. Listen. We're going to get, here's the thing with Charles Dennis, and that is At Will At Large. You remember, when Charles was here with Neil Dixon talking about chapter two of At Will At Large, a YouTube series that is done entirely on a Mac. I think it's a Mac, on a Mac iPad. Oh man, I'm telling you, it's just too much anymore. Maybe it's getting to me, you think? You think it's getting to me, all this virtual stuff? You think so? It's not. It's not getting to me. It's just tiring. Did I think I'd ever say that? I mean, I you know me, if you've listened for years or even months, I'm all for everything that goes on here in the tech world. I'm all for it. I don't scream that I have a Mac and it's better than Windows. I don't scream at Windows. I have a Mac. When things are eaten up and destroyed and tanked and motherboards die, I get new ones. I keep going. I've been going here since this place had nothing to go on but a mic and a couple of bits and a couple of RAMs or whatever. And all we had was a chat room. We couldn't even get a phone. There was no Skype. There was no Twitter. Okay. I've been through it all. And I acclimate. And I fall into whatever, the knowledge of whatever I need to do. But I don't know. And I never did much either, mind you. Never. I have a couple of pieces of paper that say things. They don't say things. That I say things. And I don't have a script or anything. And guests, it's all, we wing it all. Okay. And then we do other things. Other things come along, like, you know, we do this live, of course. And if you are listening on the Thursday evening live, you're also invited to stay after this show for Tom Savino's Savino Veritas. Now, even that, last week I'm supposed to talk to Tom about some projects, and he says, okay, after my show. And then I get a Skype call from him at, what, 11:30? And I go, you're supposed to be on the air. I even signed up, and then something went wrong with his thing. Why? Because there were updates. When there were updates, he thought he was hacked. He was getting a little paranoid because of the content of his show. And I know what he's talking about. I've had content. I've had death threats. Okay? Because of content I put on the interweb. That wasn't even bad stuff. Just stuff people didn't like. The littlest thing, someone will threaten your life for the littlest thing, right? And the interweb has just made this into just blown up everything. But the great things that are happening, like being able to shoot an entire movie, edit it, everything on an iPad, as Charles Dennis did and still does. He did with the movie Chicanery, which was, I think, the first full-length iPad movie. And there was a time when just something looked like a video. You know, they used to shoot real film at one time. And I guess they still shoot film. You know, that's another thing. So much has happened. I used to know a lot of technical things, enough of a lot of technical things to get by when I lived and worked in the analog world. But now it's more and more difficult because everything happens so fast and because so many things just, it's like when Kirk Brando was on, we were talking about all the things that are happening. And there's like just Twitter, the things you could do on Twitter you could multiply the things you can do on Twitter by what I know on Twitter by 1,000, I guess. It's not just the 140 characters. No, now you can broadcast, you send over videos, you do links to other places, you take a picture there. I don't know. Maybe, and that's what I'm saying to you. I'm asking you, is the weight getting too much for me? Do you think the weight's too much? I don't know. Charles Dennis will be here shortly. Now, what is this Skype thing? I don't have a lot of other things to talk about except, like I said, go get the books, my books, their books, anybody's books. And we'll have an announcement about more books perhaps soon. And you'll know about, because this, we'll do things on this show that we do, because it's my show and we can do things. I choose the topics and we zoom along. Okay. Nobody makes any promises for anything, but we do get promises. People promise to be on and they will be on, just like I got Charles Dennis to be on this evening. I'm going to get him here shortly. Hopefully he can stay and we're going to have Brent on and hopefully we'll be able to do a conference call because Skype keeps changing. What is that? What's that too? Now every 2 weeks, a new version of Skype is available. You know, then you go to Yahoo. Have you seen how Yahoo IM has changed? What? And then there's all these things you can do. And, you know, I know there's people out there going, yeah, right, this is all simple and easy, and just go, pa-pa-pa-pa-pa, I don't do that. I want to know why some of these things happen and what I can do. I don't mind taking 2 extra steps to get something done or to be able to do something or use a machine. I don't care. But the digital platform tells you, no, allows you, to never take any steps, right? Because look at the voice activated things now. I want to see drama. You talk to your TV. I want to see drama. And then it gives you a list of things. And how about that? You know what I hate? I really hate this auto text where it guesses the word you're going to say. Give me a break. You don't know my vocabulary. If I put V-I-S and you go visual and it goes visual. No, I don't want to say visual. Now I want to say the word that I was spelling, which you don't have in your automatic. So what is good is that? And yet, there's a positive side to that. You just go, I want to say this in French. Bingo. Let me talk to your French friends. If you have French friends. And what's with Mark Wahlberg and these commercials with the Comcast? You know, haven't we seen enough of him on these things? Pops up in movies nobody wants to see. Some people do want to see them. I don't know. You know, he's good when he's good, but it's limited. There's limited amount of space there as far as I'm concerned. You know, I'm not being a critic. I'm being me saying what I like and don't like. You don't, and you do like and don't like, and who cares, right? You do what you do. You're what you want to do. I know, it's getting wacky. And my voice, listen to my voice. Yeah, I didn't talk at all, but, you know, it's been dry, very dry, and we had to have air conditioning for a couple of days, 3 days in the 90s. That really spins your butterball, doesn't it? I should talk to people who are like, and really like, what are you talking about? There's people who have deserts, like New Mexico people. Those New Mexico people. I mean, we just had 16 days of 105. Wasn't under, and I'm complaining. What about Las Vegas? I remember I've been to these places. I know it gets way hotter than it does here in the East. But see what's happening? Then they ran out of water. I had to go get water. How do you run out of water? Well, I got well water. Well water. Well, what kind of water? Well water. I have water, you know, from bottles. My son was here last weekend. He was sick, so he decided to drink twice the water he always drinks. Well, you all know this is important, though, because if you learn nothing or get nothing from this show, remember to replenish your precious bodily fluids. Because, why? That's right, dehydration is the enemy. So there. Now, I think it's going to be okay with the sound when we get the Skype rolling and we get Charles on. And I'm going to see these guys because I'm going to put on the old cam since it's connected to this thing now. Because I had to do the live thing. And that's, you want to check in on that. Forethought live Eastern time, 10 p.m. Tuesday nights. We need a couple more broadcasts, friends. So come on. Come on. Subscribe to it. And I don't know. What are you doing Tuesday? And Tuesday's a lost evening. Even television. It's always been a lost evening in programming. Yes. Tuesday's a very weird day for communications and for the communication industry, I should say. And I did say different. Let's see what this. So Tuesday night's there. You got the old tone. Let's see what this means. Skype sent you a card. Call or send a message to the men. Oh, it's a Father's Day thing. Well, how do you like them apples? Well, so what? Have a happy Father's Day, everyone out there. What is that, the 17th? No, 17th is Saturday, 18th? Sunday? They're always on Sundays, right? Mother's Day, Father's Day, but there aren't Aunt's Day, Uncle Day's, Grandpa Day's. All of those things I was told once were created by the people, the industry, for the greeting card industry, right? Isn't that why those things happened? Happened? I mean, isn't that why they came about? Perhaps not. The difficult historian. That's me. Also, what else do we have? We got the Montreal Jewish News. We got 148.ca/Frank. Look, you know, just Google my name. I'm talking to a friend this week. A person became a friend, and it's like, well, good, you know, I don't want to sit here and tell you my resume. So what do you do? What do you do? You know, and I'm like, I don't really want to go through this. Why don't you just Google me? I don't Google people. I don't Google people. That's good. I like that. You know? I don't Google people. Google's become a verb. I'm a Googled person. That means that's an adjective. I'm a Googled person. But you can do it. Frank Cotolo. It's easy. Find it. Google it. And go get books. Buy books. And for culture, for thought, I don't ask a lot of you. I'm not, you know, guys get on like I did the show about Robert Tilton. This guy's going, I hear someone's $5,000. I can't even imitate. I'm not even as good as he is at certain broadcasting qualities. I don't have them. I don't ask for $5,000. Somebody out there needs to read a book. Somebody out there needs to read a romance book, short book, a novella. Yes, I know right now. Get over to Amazon. The book's called Sweet Shepherd. Go on over there and read. Buy it. It's digital. $2.99. Won't cost you that much. $2.99. You don't got $2.99? Borrow $2.99. I know, you know. I'm just trying to think of there were a million things, but I'm not going to do a million things because I'm going to do the show. Now, if I get... Now, you only see what happened now is now... I get Charles Dennis, Brent Huff, and I got some other things here. I think Kim Delgado is supposed to be on here. And there might even be someone else. But we're going to talk about At Will At Large. And if you went to the blog, you got the, couldn't remember the word link. You got the link if you go over there and you can watch it, watch it later. Watch all three parts. If you haven't seen it, watch three parts. I'm looking at the volume now and I'm going, why is this volume so high? It's out of control. I'm on a rocket ship that is just, it works different. Now look at that. Look at that. I wish you could see the levels. It's a strange, strange world we live in. Let's get Charles. What do you say? Charles video. Let's see if Charles is there. See if Charles is there. This volume such a drives me nuts. Oh, but I got a different angle. Hey, you like the angle I got here? Again, now Charles said, you said 9:30. We'll get Charles. There's Charles.
There's a man.
There's Charles.
Hey, Frank.
Hey, look, I got a different angle. I want to get a creative angle for you. You see this? Is that a better?
Brent? Am I got Brent at the same time?
Brent, I'm going to have to add him.
Okay.
Should I go get Brent now?
It's up to you, whatever.
Sure, we'll get Brent. Where is Kim Delgado going to be here?
Kim Delgado's cooking in the kitchen right now.
Oh, so with you, we don't have to add Kim Delgado.
Hey, lying on your back like a dog with your
paws. By the way, happy birthday again.
To whom?
To you. Wasn't it recently your birthday?
No, our birthdays are 2 days apart or something, Frank.
Really? Why did it say happy?
I'm December 16th, and you're like what?
On the 8th. No, on the 8th.
Yeah, you're half year. That's right.
Well, Skype said to me, it's Charles Dennis's birthday. Wish him happy birthday. Had that stupid little icon of a cake.
Jesus Christ. No, it's not my birthday.
Well, we'll get back to you on that.
See, we gotta do somewhere in between. We'll do the birthday together.
Now here I'm gonna add somebody here. It's gonna add people to this call. This comes real easy by just getting Mr. Brent. And I told him, you know, here he's Brent Hump, Humph, Huff. Here. Where'd you go? Charles left.
I went to tell the people in the kitchen to,
calm down.
To calm down.
Here.
I'm back.
Here, Brent Huff. Add Brent Huff. Okay, here we go. Okay. Where's Brent? Add to call Brent Huff. I clicked it. there are, okay, add to call.
I got the wrong Brent Huff, but you found the real McCoy.
That was total luck. Add to call. Come on, add Brent Huff. Add. Skype call. Why doesn't Brent Huff answer?
The one that says Remy Sykes.
I told him when he approved me as a contact.
He said Frank found me. He said it's the one with the picture.
Yeah, but that's still a guess because I didn't recall what he looked like. And yet, now I'm adding him to a call. Let's add him again here. Come on, Brent Huff. Here, Brent Huff. It says Brent Huff. Why isn't he here? Doesn't he? Let's see. Brent, is that here? It's asking me to say something. Hello? Do you see that now? Add to call Brent Huff. What is going on with this? Oh, here comes Brent Huff.
No, that's me. Here he comes.
Brent Huff? Can you hear us, Brent Huff?
Brent Huff?
It's like it's calling. There are little dots coming. I think.
Hello?
Brent Huff.
We're looking for Mr. Brent Huff.
Wait a whole. I guess there's more than one. I guess there's many.
We want
there's the only one from the Ozarks, the only barefoot boy with cheek.
There you go.
Whoa, there's a reference. Mr. Brent Huff is here. Welcome, to Cotolo Chronicles. I'm chronicling. This is not about me. It's about you guys. Okay. We're chronicling. How are you, Mr. Huff?
I am doing very well. How about yourself?
I'm fine. And so is Mr. Dennis. You can't see him because you're on you don't have a video thing going, but that's okay.
I can see Charles and I can see you. Can you guys see me?
No. Well, we could just see a picture of you, right? Do you just have a still?
Congress or something.
Yeah. You're at a press conference.
Oh, I don't know. But anyway, I can see both of you.
Okay, well, that's fine. It's a radio show anyway. Nobody can see anything.
What are you doing, Frank? You look like J. Carl Nash, Life of Luigi there. What are you wearing?
Isn't this something? It's the angle I have on the, what am I wearing? I'm wearing one of these, Marlon Brando, Stella shirts here.
See? An undershirt.
Yeah.
It's a wife beater.
No, it's not, no, it's got
oh,
a.
What? Oh, okay, that's legit.
Yeah, it's got a, it's like a sports shirt, even though I don't play sports. Mr. Huff, I was telling, Charles, and Charles told me, anybody looking for Brent Huff on the Skype menu, you're gonna have to, it's like a lottery.
I had no idea. I didn't really know what my, name was on Skype. That's pretty simple, Brent Huff, but there's many of them, huh?
Yeah, I mean, did you think that your name was difficult, was not shared with others? I mean, Brent Huff, right?
Yeah.
Charles, you're same with you, Charles, right? Charles Dennis. There must be 100 Charles Dennises.
Listen, I went years ago when I first lived in L.A. I went away for the weekend. I came back, and there were like 8 messages to go on. Charlie, what's the matter? Do you want to call me, man? Charlie, what's wrong? Charlie, I got to get that shit. So the other Charles Dennis was a drug dealer from Watts, and I wasn't he.
Ah.
Have we all seen, okay, I was telling everybody and doing the usual promotion stuff for, what? Who's that? Okay, I'm having all sorts of weird sound contortions and distortions going on. So stick with us, bear with us, and my hand will, see, if you were directing, Charles, you would have to say, get that hand out of your face, right? Frank?
Or you got Brent Huff too, who's
I can't see Brent Huff. He's in front. He looks like he's on this. He looks like one of those CBS Evening News stills, you know?
Brent.
It's okay.
I can see what photo this is.
He doesn't know. You don't know?
Is
that a microphone? Oh, no, it looks like you're behind a camera. Is that a camera? Is that one?
Yeah. I'm looking like I'm directing there anyway.
Yeah. So,
Did you do your homework on Brent Huff?
What's that, Charles?
I'm sorry.
Did you do your homework on Brent Huff?
Brent Huff, I thought was a football player at one point. Doesn't he sound like a football player?
And Sam Huff.
Oh, that's why there was a Sam Huff. Correct.
Yep.
Played for the Giants, right?
Brent, you don't have to tell the resume, but for people who might not know, your connection to the business, or your connection with Charles Dennis. Why don't you talk a little bit about it?
About how I met Charles?
Sure. That'll, and then what you did and how that affected your life.
ever since I met Charles, my life has been nothing but roses. Now, how I met Charles was, we're both with, WME, William Morris Endeavor, for voiceovers. So we both do voiceovers, and when we go into the office, you know, we're there in the lobby, and we sort of get to meet everybody. And so that's how Charles and I came in contact. You know, we're both actors, and then we both direct as well. So that's sort of, we had a lot in common to talk about. So that's my connection to Charles.
So you're doing commercials. What kind of voiceovers are you doing when you meet each other?
Well, all sorts of voiceovers. Could be commercials, animation, promos,
well,
trailers,
when you met
that
him,
kind of stuff.
The day you met him, what were you doing? Let's see how good your memory is from there.
I couldn't tell you. Charles, do you remember?
Remember, Charles?
I just, you know, and I've told this repeatedly, I thought Lee Marvin had come back from the grave. You know, I mean, look at that picture. He walked in there and I heard this voice and said, who's this? And you know, I'm a talent junkie. I said, I got to work with this guy. And I made my first iPad movie, Aquil, and Brent co-starred in it with Neil Dixon. It won that award at Buffalo. And he's been part of my rep company ever since. And I'm a huge fan of his films. He makes these extraordinary documentaries, award-winning documentaries, and they're just fabulous.
Who is that? Who are those weird stray voices? Back then.
It's not on my end.
No. That's Delgado, be quiet.
It's the kitchen. It's the Dennis kitchen.
It's the kitchen. I'm going to move into another room because this is...
Why are they cooking? Did you not have?
Because Delgado was a gourmet chef, and I said, if you're coming over to do the Cotola Chronicles, you also have to cook for
it. Look at the Dennis Cam. We follow Charles Dennis through the through his home. I love how that works there. I can't do that with this. That's amazing. Look, there you go. Now it's nice and quiet. Now it's nice and quiet.
Now it's quiet.
When they're done, would you show us some of the fine gourmet foods that they were preparing?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
Well, I mean, Mr. Huff and his lovely wife, I hope, will come within the next weeks and have dinner here and have one of these gourmet meals.
I would love to.
Dennis, are you on location now? I mean, Brent, are you on location now? Can you, are you close by? Can you go over for dinner?
Yeah, we're both in Los Angeles. We live about 20 miles away from each other. So, I would love to come over and have a free gourmet meal.
I'm securing this, rendezvous.
Yeah, I'm all over it.
That's all you don't have. Oh, good. Well, then, I mean, one way it's good because you're close and you can go there. Another way it's bad, and that's you're not on location in Siberia where you're doing a major motion picture or what have you. Well,
where are you located?
Me, I'm in the I'm in the foothills of the Green Mountains of Pennsylvania.
Is that like the Poconos? I don't know.
It's close. It's about an hour and a half from the Poconos.
Okay.
But you know, the Green Mountain range goes for miles and miles and miles.
He's an Ozark boy.
Yeah, you mentioned that. You said something about the Ozark. When you think of Ozarks, You think of certain templates and probably stereotypes. Tell us about, did you grow up in the Ozarks?
I did. I grew up in a town called Springfield, Missouri.
Oh, wait a second. That Springfield, Missouri is like, that's like a, isn't that the capital? No. Yeah.
No, St. Louis. Most people don't know this. This is how you can trick people in trivia. Most people cannot tell you the capital of Missouri.
Well, yeah, well, I was pretty good at capitals. Like, I know.
Of Illinois, Frank.
It's that's Springfield, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think
Illinois is Springfield. No, Lincoln, isn't it? Is a Springfield. Lincoln or Springfield?
But Illinois,
Missouri is Jefferson City.
Jefferson City is Missouri.
Yeah. But a lot of people don't know. Anyway, I grew up in the Ozarks.
Wait a second, we're playing. Wait, I'll take state capitals for 600, please. Go ahead, right. Brent, tell us.
Anyway, I grew up in Springfield, Missouri, a big claim to fame. Brad Pitt and I went to the same high school. And we were both just put in the Kickapoo High School Theater Hall of Fame.
By the way, if we reverse that, that's his big thing, too, that he went to high school with
exactly.
you.
Yeah.
I thought Brad Pitt was from Joplin.
No, Springfield. We went to the same high school. So, and then I grew up, did you ever see the movie Winter's Bone?
Winter's Bone.
Yeah, it was that sort of made Jennifer Lawrence a star.
No, I don't
know. Anyway, I grew up about 20 miles from there. So that shows you sort of we'll call it rustic.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very, they embrace being hillbillies down there. It's not like a bad term for them, but, it's hillbilly heaven. There's a place called Branson down there. You might have heard of.
Oh, Branson is the Las Vegas area there, right? Like type?
Branson is sort of Missouri's version of, Nashville.
Well, I lived in Nashville. I think it's different than Nashville. Cause isn't it like one big strip? Branson with clubs and country.
Because Hank Williams had his own theater.
There's a lot of theaters down there. It's packed, you know, during the summer. You know, the one, you're correct, Frank. It's like one main road goes through town.
Mm-hmm.
It's like packed there. It's like theaters everywhere.
Do you go and hang out there? Or?
When I was growing up, it's just about every summer. That's where we had our vacation because we couldn't afford to go to a lot of other places, but we could drive down to Branson and, you know, rent a condo down there. It was, you know, or a cabin. It was kind of fun.
So you're from the Missouri and Ozark sounds to me like a big family.
Big family?
Big family.
Yeah, just my sister and I, but, you know, so it's not a huge family. So it's,
They were big, Frank.
Charles, what about your family? You have siblings?
Well, I got two brothers.
You know, oh, okay.
I was, born in Toronto, but planned by escape from the age of 7. Discovered years later. People always said, where are you from?
Yeah, you're from here.
You're from here. And then I found out I was conceived in New York. So I always had an affinity for the city.
My parents, I was 10, they still couldn't conceive of me. But here's the deal. The deal is that, so you guys really, Toronto and Springfield, Missouri, just Missouri and Ontario are as different as chalk and cheese here. So it's the business and the art that put you guys together. So how do you meet in a room and say, hey, you don't know one another, or did you know one another's work at the time or something?
No.
No, it's just everybody in the William Morris office sort of gets to know each other after a while. We go in there quite a bit.
It's a clicky thing.
Strike up conversations and,
But what I didn't know at the time was that I had already seen him in the Perils of Gwendolyn.
Mm.
You know, when I realized it was Brent, that changed my whole. Are you aware of this film? Do you know about this film?
Yeah, I think I do know that film, but say what you just said. It changed what? When you found out you had already seen him, it changed what? You said, it changed my whole what?
I remember watching this movie because I wasn't aware of it when it first came out. And correct me, Brent, was it not the highest grossing French film ever?
It was one of the most, at the time, you know, it's changed since then. At the time, it was one of the most expensive movies made in France.
Right, right.
But I don't know what it did. Gross. It made more money in Europe than it did in the U.S., for sure.
Also the fact that, you know, it was with Tawny Kitaen. You know, I was very jealous.
Yeah.
How's your mic doing there? You're kind of breaking up, Charles.
Is your really?
Yeah. Go ahead, say.
It's a built-in mic. What can I tell you?
Oh, okay. That's okay. I think it's when we talk over one another. Skype decides. See, it just happened. So Brent, so you and John, and this is how long ago you guys, know one another?
About 8 or 9 years ago, something like that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we did the first Atwill in 2011, and, Brent was he was the bad guy in that. And then, when it became a series, you know, his character kept recurring.
I put the Foo Dog, link onto the blog, so everybody, told everybody to go over there. If they don't know about the third, if they haven't started seeing the second Atwill.
Well, I got to tell you, Frank.
What?
We have not been watched as many times the third as the second. And Ulrika and I kept wondering, where are we going wrong? What's wrong? And then we realized it was after we did the Cthulhu Chronicles last time that everybody started watching. So we got to get all the people to go on board.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's one of the reasons I said, well, the new one's out. I didn't know that it jumped the way it did, but of course we have a lot of people who do what we say because we know where they park their cars. But anyway,
what is your viewership or listenership?
Well, you know, it's always been difficult from the day this started, this internet, interweb radio stuff. Broadcasting. It's always been difficult to find or to calculate the number, no less the demographic, because they have this thing they're called unique listeners or people who come in and out or what have you. But here's the deal. Once we were on before they created podcasts and before the iPod became popular, we were on from the very beginning when cable allowed us to stream quickly. Which is how they do this. Couldn't do it on, you had to record it or what have you. But anyway, when podcasts came about, people who could not listen live because servers only hold so many people, then you got the people, listening on the rebroadcasts. Then we started, it was the first syndicated internet radio show. So we were the first show to be on a number of different independent stations. And this is way before, anybody wanted anything to do with broadcasting on the interweb. So the point is by now, there are thousands of listeners and God knows from every place because, you know, when we look at the map on Blogger, we find people find us from all over the place. And now you got there's so many different, streets to get to the main avenue now with this contraption. Did that answer your question? Because I want to talk about you guys, not this show.
Let me just...
But I'm glad that, and we hope that we're going to get a lot more viewers. So let's talk about three, and which I saw the other day, and I wrote down some things. But why don't you talk about three?
One of my favorite things about three is that my friend of 40 years now, Michael Lindsay Hogg, who is the father of the music video, and is Orson Welles' son, and his mother was Geraldine Fitzgerald, and I always wanted him to act in something for me, and I got him for this episode, and he and Brent, although they'd never met yet, Brent wasn't available to come and shoot the scene with him, so we made it a telephone conversation, and I had to shoot them separately. But it's one of the many reasons to watch episode three.
I was telling everyone who didn't know already that you do this on an iPad, on Mac iPad, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And this revolutionary process. Are you, what are you using? I was talking before about, before you guys came on here, I was talking, I don't know what I was talking about. It had to do with film and video, what have you. When you're going to do a documentary these days, Brent, what do you use? Are you a digital, hard drive camera, or do you have a 3D, 70 millimeter? What, how do you, how does it work?
I make it pretty simple. I use a Canon 5D. For the most part, because when I'm talking to somebody, I don't want to bring in a big crew and dollies and a lot of lights and flags, because I want them to be more intimate one-on-one. Now, when I'm doing B-roll, it's something else, but just I don't want to overwhelm them. So I like it when I'm interviewing a subject, it's just sort of the subject and myself. And after a while, they don't pay any attention to the camera because we leave such a small footprint with those cameras. And they're pretty amazing. I had that camera in Times Square with like 5,000 people on a tripod around me. I got panoramic shots. The police walked right past me, didn't say a word. So, I mean, look, how much money would that have cost me to shoot if I would have brought in a camera crew with permits and all that?
I mean, that's the joy of this new form of filmmaking. When I shoot with the iPad, people just think I'm either reading something on my iPad or I'm taking a picture. Yeah. There's no clue. There's just me. And so I'm able to go into locations. That's why I won that first Samuel Fuller Guerrilla Filmmaking Award, because that's really what it is. Which was that the new documentary where you were in Times Square?
That was Chasing Beauty.
Tell them a little about Chasing Beauty.
Yeah, tell us about that and where we can, where anybody can see some of these things if they're located somewhere.
Well, Chasing Beauty was something. I was in the modeling business for years. That's sort of how I got started in the business. I was with the Ford agency in New York.
Right.
And I went over and did the Paris, Milan, that fashion stuff. But it was a really fascinating business, and it's there's good parts and there's bad parts, and I wanted to give an honest betrayal of what really that life is like, and it sort of just caught fire. It came out and it was the number one documentary on iTunes for 3 weeks in a row, the number one independent film, and it was beating up big movies because people were just fascinated by the subject. And it was like sometimes they want to see these the pretty people stumble and fall, but it's the ugly side of being pretty, sort of the tagline.
You got to admit that's fun, you know, when people do. Yeah. People love to see train wrecks.
On Netflix as well?
Yeah, it was on Netflix. Logo Channel picked it up. It's still, you can still see it on Hulu and iTunes and that sort of thing. But it did really well. I'm very proud of it. And so...
Chasing Beauty, then. That's the name of it.
Chasing Beauty.
And then after that, he did an amazing one called Rockabilly.
Okay. Yeah, he did my take on the rockabilly subculture. I didn't even know what rockabilly was, really. And I went to an event out here in the Southern California, and I saw all these beautiful pinup girls, this great music, all the guys with the pompadours and the 50s cars and trucks. Yeah. It's this whole lifestyle and the music that I really liked a lot. And so I wanted to really find out what drew people to to dressing like they're in the 50s all the time today and acting like they're still in the 50s. And it was really fascinating.
There's this thing called, there's punk rockabilly. It's amazing how the genres,
Yeah, psychobilly. You
know, yes, because I know Zane Campbell. You know Zane Campbell?
I don't.
Boy, if you want to do a psychobilly, if you want to do anything on psychobilly or document, this guy is terrific, and it's a shame because he comes along during this independent music time when, you know, you just don't have the backing. But you do sell. The guy named Zane Campbell, you should look him up, man. He is terrific. Terrific, yeah. Man. I reviewed some of his stuff when he first came out. Anyway, yeah, there's different genres of that. There's psychobilly and
zombie bill. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff. There's the offshoots of it.
Crazy stuff. So we got the modeling, the acting, the directing, the documentary making, the voiceovers.
Yeah.
And what time is there to do anything else, right?
Can I just say one thing? The reason all my actor friends, and there's a lot of like well-known friends, they want to be in Charles's movies because he's such a terrific writer. And I'm not just saying this because he's right here and I'm looking at him on Skype. But he really is. He's a terrific writer and it's always fun to do his, shootings. He gets great actors to work with him and a great script. And so what more can an actor ask for? And that's why we love working on these things like, Atwell at Large.
I noticed when I was watching.
Thank you.
Oh, well, you're welcome.
Well deserved, Charlie. I'm not just blowing smoke.
Otherwise you wouldn't come back.
Well, everybody comes back, you know, because we love working with you and the script is so good.
And one of the things.
Ed Asner was very upset. I had a housewarming here on the weekend. He was very upset because he hadn't been asked to do an episode, but we're doing one with him.
I saw those pictures on Facebook. Yeah. I noticed this, and a couple of notes I made that were just things rolling around my head when I was watching Charles' stuff, specifically this series. And that's one of the things that Brent brings up, which is hard to say. Brent brings up and it's the actors, how they seem to really be, and I don't know if this is, it's good for the piece itself, but that a certain excitement comes out of these people who are doing these parts for you. It has to do with how much they enjoy the dialogue and their lines, because they really seem to be enjoying it. I'm not saying that they look like they're acting, what have you. I think everybody's looking at it, but they really seem to be enjoying the lines. And you know, Brent and Charles, you know this too, that there are some damn good lines that people don't make come alive, and there are certain very terrible lines that people that are great actors can't bring alive. But these guys really, and the girl, the ladies, and that's why I think the other thing I was going to bring up is how, you know, you do some great editing based on that. I mean, I don't know how to edit from these, you know, from the digital platform. But what I'm saying is they seem like you don't even have to cut. They just want to keep getting into this. How many takes do you go with these people? They just want to do it over and over again because they're enjoying it, not because they think they got it wrong.
Well, I have what I call my rep company.
Right.
There's between 20 and 30 actors whom I've worked with for the last 10 years or so. And you know, Brent is right at the top of the list. But we just shot yesterday with Brent and Pete Sepinuk. And Pete Sepinuk is Brent's editor on almost all your documentaries and your features. And he's an amazing actor who nobody ever puts on camera.
Hey, what's wrong with everybody?
he's a very talented guy, but yeah.
But you know what I'm saying, Brent? Well, Brent knows what I'm saying because you read it. You were just talking about that's what led me to get onto the subject. Charles's dialogue. You said he's such a good writer. Am I right in acknowledging the fact that I'm looking at actors who are really enjoying saying these words?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, that not all scripts are good. Most of them honestly aren't. Mm. But Charles has a real ear for dialogue, and his stories are always fascinating. So, but his great dialogue, and then you pair that up with these really terrific actors he gets. It's fun, you know. I'll be in Charles's stuff.
That started my movie Chicanery, and he had a scene. He was just sublime in it. The beautiful Kate Vernon. Mm-hmm. He meets her at the bar, and you know, he says, "I'm not hitting on you," but you know, he asks her some questions. She's reading the sports page, and it turns out that they went to the same high school together in Missouri. And not only that, but they played on the same basketball team because this gorgeous woman used to be a man.
And how does Brad Pitt fit into this one?
Each part of Brad Pitt.
Role, he didn't get it.
Okay.
But he was close.
I loved when Michael Laskin pops out. I didn't expect him in part three, in chapter three.
Well, Bob Nixon, but he played him in the first season. We introduced the character before.
Yeah, I didn't expect him in the third chapter. And, you know, I guess I've been telling people, look, if you, you know, maybe you should watch, if you watch three, maybe you want to quickly run over one and two again. There's such a, and I don't know if this is me and just getting old or losing interest in life, but, you know, but there's a long time between parts, no fault of your own, you know?
No, it's just, God bless the actors, they're busy. They're, you know, Brent's shooting something or he's got a job, other people are, and it's, you know, it would be nice if I could find a sponsor so that I could actually have this thing happening regularly, but I just have to do it when people are available. I mean, look at Orson Welles, The Other Side of the Wind. He was making the picture for 10 years.
Okay, that is the situation. We understand that. I'm just saying that, but the viewers, need to review. And, you know, this is a day when people can sit, I don't know how they do this. People sit down and, you know, the new binging, you know, people binge on.
Yeah, binge, yeah.
On series.
House of Cards, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, that's outrageous, isn't it? But, so if they could do that, cause the nature of series these days, it's not like the old days. In other words, if you watched, even though I'm going to let's say like The Naked City. Remember, both of you remember that? You're too young, Brent, or you remember Naked City?
I don't remember that.
Okay, Charles.
Not that, right? Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, I have some more. I think I have four episodes on TV.
So if it's Wednesday or Thursday or Monday night, whenever it is, The Naked City comes on, you sit down and watch The Naked City, okay? And you enjoy it, and it's wonderful that it has a conclusion that is not necessary to even remember the next episode it's on, right?
Oh, yeah, no, completely self-contained.
Right. And that went on forever, because series, the nature of series these days is completely different, and you're right in the pocket here, because At Will At Large is, you know, see, it goes on, you know, you can't get complete stories like you do in a movie, and let's face it, some movies want to leave you hanging because they want sequels, but you know what I'm talking about, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You talking to me? Yes, absolutely.
Anybody who wants to answer. That's the way I work on this show. Anybody who wants to respond.
Want to come in.
Bring them all in. And yes, is anyone listening to Frank? I don't know.
No, I might watch four episodes in a row, and then they don't have to be exactly the same amount of time, like, you know, 42 minutes or whatever to go into an hour show.
Well, yeah, I sent them to the page that has, and I said, look, even if you saw one and two, you know, go over them again. This is now 20, 40, 60 minutes long, whatever. Now catch up, you get more listens. So that way you enjoy the third one most. I had to go back. I don't know if this is intrinsic of my, as I said, me, just being so, you know, completely absorbed at my age. But, I like to look over them again because I think it loses something in those, and there's a personal opinion about series and stuff, you know.
Right.
Charles, what do you think?
I am appearing in the next episode of At Will at Large, and people said, well, who's shooting it? And I want to say I'm very, very grateful that Mr. Brent Huff has agreed to direct my scenes.
Good.
In the next episode.
I hope he's an easy actor to work with. He's easy as a director, but he might be a difficult actor to try to get him out of his trailer.
Right. Yeah. And this will be your first experience with the iPad.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure he'll get it right down there because he did a – I heard this story is all over – it's all over the industry how he got this panoramic view while he was shooting something.
It's going viral. Already.
Brent Huff and Charles Dennis are with me. There were supposed to be seven more, but they all went out and did stuff. And we want
they're working in the mine, for God's sake.
Are you still in the kitchen? Are we ever going to, you know, the show only goes another hour.
It depends. Is it the Magnificent Seven or the Sleepy Happy and You Know Who?
But
Brent, do you have to go somewhere now? Because I'll bring in the next guy.
Brent, you're not going, are you?
Well, I can stay a little bit longer if you want me, but
sure, we want you. What do you think?
Hey, stay. I'll bring Delgado in too, though.
Yes,
and you'll get a word in edgewise if he starts talking.
Yeah, I've got to run to this thing called Thursdays at Newhall. So they do these readings over in Newhall, California, that I committed to go.
What do they read? What do you mean? It's a reading club? What do you mean? What do they read?
Well, this is my first time over there. They just knew that I'm a director and an actor and writer, so they wanted me to come over. So this is my virgin experience there. So I will see tonight what it's all about.
Hold on, Frank. You're on until 10:30?
Your time? Let's see. What's your time? 8 to 9, 9 to 10, 10 to 11. So I'm on until 8 your time. We're on another 50 minutes here.
Keep Brent around until he has to go.
That's what I said. Yeah, sure. Sure.
Shoes tonight, Brent?
I'm sorry?
Are you wearing shoes?
I am. I thought I could do this in my underwear since you're not seeing me, but I actually have pants on.
Nope, I'm in a Newhall.
Oh, yeah.
That must have been one of those.
That'd be interesting.
One of those crazy director in jokes right there, but here on Cotolo Chronicles, you hear all the jargon. And all the inside material that is possible, because these are men who do film. These are men. You know, we know the funny how
that's what you might, you know, we're manly men.
These are manly men. These are masculine manly men who are males and do the thing that testosteronically. I got a whole new language going. Testosteronically, I wanted to say again, this round of conversation came off of the fact that Michael Laskin popped in too, and I thought he was isn't he out on the road doing something?
No.
Oh, okay. Because I'm supposed to have him back on.
Actually, he's on his way to London on the weekend.
There you go. London on the weekends. What, he teaching?
He's teaching somewhere in London.
Yeah, he's terrific. I would like to be a director of Michael Laskin because I could just do this. And action! Then I can go out for a corned beef sandwich and come back. It'd be done. I'd get the master shot, right? Because what's he going to do wrong?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's easy being a director. Tell him, Charles.
Well, I'll tell you. You know about the one-man show that Charles wrote and directed?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Michael did a piece of that on my show. He actually did the piece of that. Yeah, what about?
Oh, okay.
I know, poor Michael, he said, I did the whole show. He's like a marathon bike rider or something.
Yeah. Well, he didn't think he could.
Solo, for God's sake.
Yeah, he did the whole show, and I promised him that I was going to, because we were going through his book and how he teaches, because a great a new way of teaching that I loved, and I was telling him how horrible an actor I am and have been when I've done acting. So he gave me some, and I'm supposed to have him on again. I'm supposed to read for him, and I'm petrified. But go ahead. What were you going to say? We lost you.
Charles?
Brent, we were saying something?
I wasn't saying anything. Not important anyway.
Well, you come to the right place. This is Cotolo Chronicles, where pop culture takes the high road. And we have Charles Dennis, who's been... God, Charles has been on here now a couple of years. We've been on here. Charles was on here since Hard 4 is where we met, right? Charles, you and I? And Brent, I'm sorry if I did not get as acquainted as I should have with your work, but I am now. That's why I'm writing some of this stuff down, because I want to be more acquainted, with some of your stuff, especially your documentaries. Documentaries are, I think, as good as Ken Burns is at documentaries, we need some more names, right? I mean, everything's Ken Burns, Ken Burns, Ken Burns, right?
And Michael Moore. Yeah, and Michael Moore is the other one that's, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's so, I don't know. I don't know about.
They're as good as or better as far as I'm concerned. Tell them about the new one that you're editing.
Yeah, that. Come on.
What I'm working on now, and I'm working with Pete Sepinick, he's editing this, who is also an at-will. But it's about a male model. This guy, his name is Hoyt Richards. He was born in Pennsylvania, outside of Philadelphia, but spent all of his summers in Nantucket. So it's a well-to-do family. He went on to go to Princeton, where he played football. He graduated from Princeton, then goes to New York City and becomes the first male supermodel. Mm-hmm. And then sort of the wheels come off because he joins a cult. And he's in this cult for 20 years. And the cult believes they're from a star called Arcturus, and they're sort of a master race.
Whoa.
And he is sort of forced to disown his family. And this went on for 20 years. They gave the cult $4.5 million, and now he is sort of reuniting and reacquainting himself with his family again. So it's just a fascinating story.
That is.
And if you meet Hoyt in person, he's a very charming, smart guy. You would never in a million years think we'd get caught up in this cult. So it's sort of jaw dropping, and it's a cautionary tale. It's a story of redemption in the end.
And it's called?
But it's called, as right now, the title is Who is Hoyt Richards?
Who is Hoyt Richards?
Okay. Google Hoyt Richards, it'll come up, you know, the cult that he was in called Eternal Values.
Oh, good God.
Vanity Fair did an expose on it in 99. That's, you know, that's sort of, and I knew being a model and in the industry, and we were both with the Ford Modeling Agency, that I knew this story. And then I ran into him years later when the Ford agency asked me to shoot this model's reunion in Los Angeles. And I filmed that, and then I see Hoyt there. And I go, oh, you're the guy from the cult. And that's sort of how we picked that up again.
That's a weird. Hoyt.
Yeah.
A name like Hoyt. What a Hoyt. There are a lot of Hoyts out there, right?
Yeah.
What's his name? The famous country western Hoyt.
Hoyt Ashman. Hoyt.
Baskins?
No, Hoyt.
Was it Axton?
Yeah, Hoyt Axton.
I think that's right.
What he wrote the No No song for Ringo Starr and other various. And he was in the Black Stallion. He was the father of that kid Alex.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, Hoyt Axton.
Like Reno something.
He's run. Yeah, yeah, Alex Reno. Yeah. Hoyt ran, wrote a bunch of, that was Hoyt. By that, you know, there's no other Hoyts. Are there? Other Hoyts. Show business. Come on, come up with another Hoyt.
Well, Hoyt Richards' real name is John Hoyt, but there was a John Hoyt that was in Screen Actors Guild, so he changed his name to Hoyt Richards.
That was John Hoyt, who was actually hoisting something. He was on Broadway in the 30s, but when he came out here, they said it's too long. So he became John Hoyt, and he always played very prissy. And he ended up being somebody, a grandfather in some sitcom. I said, are they kidding? John Hoyt?
Then there's at the end, there was a big hit song, The Big Hoyt.
You can be a fool now for the Cotolo Chronicles. I'm moving the laptop again into the dining room because Kim Delgado is serving the first course.
We're going to see this too. Well, we will, and I'll describe it, and you'll describe it.
And get to hear people eating it.
What time do you have to leave, Brent?
Well, I might as well go now since going in to have some food.
Well, you have
going to Julia Child party.
Okay, Brent, you're in the Hall of Comebacks. So come back again, okay? One way or another, we'll talk more about your stuff. Even when Charles isn't here, we can talk about your stuff. We'll get some things.
Yeah, I'm jealous.
Hey, Frank, I really appreciate you having me on. It was a lot of fun.
I'm glad to meet you, and I'm looking forward to knowing more about your work. And
we are convening Monday at 11 to do the scene. Is that okay?
That's okay with me. Okay, Monday at 11. So see, we're setting this up for our next right here.
Yeah, and
show.
I'm jealous. I wish I could be there, but what are you going to do?
I wish you could too. All right, Frank and Charles, thank you for setting this up.
Mr. Huff, see you soon.
Wait a minute. I recognize.
Ah.
Hello. Here's your Facebook friend.
Here they come.
Here's the deal. Okay. All right.
Good night, Brent.
So Frank, Brent's here's gone. Your Facebook friend, the CFO.
Hi, nice
yes.
to meet you.
How are, yes, I know. That was a quick one too. Are you guys always on some device? You're quick.
Okay. So now I'm going to introduce you and the audience to Mr. Kim Delgado. Here he is.
Here comes Mr. Kim Delgado. Hey, I recognize you. I know this guy.
Uh-oh. Of course you do.
I want to be
on. He has been on more commercials than
sure.
anybody.
Actually, I'm currently recurring
on
the Showtime show, I'm Dying Up Here.
Oh, you're in that Jim Carrey show, right?
And I'm a writer as well. I have a movie that is on sold 100 countries. It's on Lifetime called Taken in Broad Daylight with James Vanderbeek and our dear director from Canada, Gary Yates. He's pretty well known. And I write, act, and now I'm going to be producing and directing. I have a piece that I'm shooting called Gambino at the end of the month.
Is that about the Gambino family?
It is Gambino? Not, but it is a mobster. I have several pieces.
Oh, so why not use a real name?
Well, I actually have a pilot called Stone's Law, and I wrote that with Joe Sabatino, who was the executive producer of Necessary Roughness, which ran for 3 years on USA.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the rights to a gentleman named Barry Levin. He's a well-known attorney in New York. He's had over 100 mafia cases.
Yeah.
And he's been in about 800 news articles, 10 books have written about him. And
sure, I've
seen
him.
We got his rights, and we put together a show about his exploits. He was a 2-time Golden Globe champion, and he was a gutter rat, and he became a lawyer and got lucky and got his first case with Carmine Persico. Okay. And we have to change all the names for legal and fiduciary reasons so that he can not get sued or killed.
You could just change the names to real names. You can make Gambino, make him
right. When you're doing this, for the short film I'm shooting, I can use the Gambino. For the television show, if we would sell it to HBO or Showtime, you're going to have issues if you're using real cases with real names.
Sure.
Just change names. And that's exciting. We're currently speaking with a company that wants to get it set up, and we had it optioned last year, and they let it go. It went in turnaround, so now we're talking to another company. But, you know, it's exciting as an author, a writer, to see your projects move forward.
Oh, yeah.
I've been an actor for many years, and on that side of the camera, you know, you've seen me in everything from Kindergarten Cop, Patriot Games, NYPD Blue, CSI.
Okay, let's find this, because I know this is always great, because I know so many people who I've seen, and I've been in that situation, though I never went as far as you did. But let's look at Patriot Games. Now, someone's watching Patriot Games. This is one of those, you know, USA movies that's on. I mean, it's probably re-edited and cut 1,000 ways, but it's on a lot, all right?
Yeah.
Okay, so give us the spot we all look for in Patriot Games, or spots. Where are
right
you?
Right after Harrison Ford's wife has gone to the hospital, where she's almost killed in the car.
In the car crash, right.
I'm Porter questioning the Sinn Féin Irish Republic, Richard Harris. And
yeah.
I gotta tell you, Richard Harris is a sweetheart.
Was a sweetheart.
By the way, can I just, Frank?
Yeah.
The first course.
Sorry, Kim. We're doing a real, here's the first course. Oh, Kim, you can eat, by the way, while we talk, Kim. What is it? What do we have?
Well, it's,
Give us
a smoked whitefish on a bed of arugula toasted pine nuts, a crispy toasted garlic onion.
Oh, that sounds so Californian.
Apple strips and some Camembert blue cheese with lemon oil and champagne vinaigrette.
Now you know that by looking at it, or you were in there cooking with them, weren't you?
Well, I cooked it.
Oh, you cooked it.
There you go. Worked the Four Seasons in New York.
I worked it.
I was there one summer. The Four Seasons.
Great restaurants, and my buddy John Savage and I cooked. We had the fish and the fowl. We did catering with pastries. And when I came to California, I think I did one big catering gig for Smokey Robinson's nephew's wedding, and then I just became an actor. I was like not interested, but I still have the chops, and I love to cook, and even more importantly, I love to eat. So
I like to cook. I like to cook too. We can learn things. If you don't have a cook, you should. You want to have a cookbook or something good you can come up? That is so Californian, what you just described in that plate, though. That is not something, if you're anywhere near, anywhere in the tri-state area, stop off at a diner and say, let me have some of that salmon with the apple nuts and the blue cheese and the gracious leaves on the green, whatever it is you put in there, and the apple slices and a couple of Pandamanian pears or something. You can't get that crap around here.
Well, what happens is when you use toasted pine nuts, they're crunchy and salty.
Yeah, right?
And then the creamy blue cheese with the smoky fish that's like juicy. And then you get the crunch of the toasted garlic onions.
I love it.
And then, of course, you've got the arugula. And I forgot, I put a little bit of radicchio, very little, it's bitter. So you've got the bitter and the sweet. And then you've got the greens and the crunch. Very nice.
Well, now I'm hungry again. Just thinking about it. Tell us. Well, Charles is eating. Okay. So the new project, we're going back to the new project.
New project.
Is a Gambino.
We do have to sell alcohol at launch, so don't forget. Is Gambino. And Tony Cox, who's an actor I've known for many years, he was an agent at Shaman Freitas in San Diego. When I first came out to California in the 80s, he worked for Shaman Freitas, and he's now become an actor after being an agent for all those years. And I looked at his demo reel, and I said, well, you know, be honest, you need a scene with a star, mm-hmm. and you need something. You got stuff, but no one is going to really jump up and down. You need a potent piece of material to take notice of. So he said, well, why don't you write something for me? And I go, well, you know, then you're going to have it produced. He goes, I know all the people from Stu Siegel, Running Dragon, all the shows that were done down here. They all owe me favors, and he's in San Diego. I'll come up to L.A. I'll get an entire crew, an A.D., a director, a costumer. I will get the cameras, the equipment, the lighting, the sound. I'll get an editor. I'll get a composer. And you direct it. I said, absolutely. So we're at the stage where we're looking for a lead actor, and we've sent the script to a couple of one of the Sopranos guys and another, Al Sapiens is a well-known actor, and we're waiting to see who bites on the short. And it's about 14, 15 pages, and actually I now have an entire theme for a movie from the short. And it's quite interesting. It takes place after the funeral of the oldest son of a mob don, mm-hmm. and he meets his youngest son in the back room of a bar, and it's all in one room.
Is this a period piece? The period piece? I mean, what, or is this happening?
Oh, no. It's placed right now, and there's an explosive confrontation between the father and the son. And the son finds out that his older brother was killed because of something that his father did. And the father wants the son to take over the business, and he's a lawyer working at a prestigious law firm. He doesn't want anything to do with it. And herein lies the sparks of an older Don telling his son what he's going to do and the son rebelling. So there's a heavy climax between them, and I won't reveal what happens, but it's pretty intense. So I wrote a scene that could have a lot of emotions, a lot of crescendos, It's a roller coaster with some violence and some great, you know, argumentative banter between father and son. And I'm a dad. I have a 24-year-old, so I get the banter between the 24-year-old and the dad.
Right. You got a millennial. I got a millennial. I got two millennials. Yeah.
Well, I say it's great that they turn the corner. I would say that most millennials, I teach at the New York Film Academy, screenwriting classes, acting.
God, when do you eat? This is when you eat now. That's why you, right? You know, I'm doing an awful lot of stuff. And then I grab a meal now that I make every now and then, right?
Before I get old, I got to keep busy. And my issue with a lot of the youngsters coming up is they don't want to have to suffer for their art. They don't want to have to work hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, this isn't like a part-time business. Like they think, well, when Saturday comes or Friday night, I'm going, yeah, no, you're in class. You're learning monologues as an actor. You're doing something to further your career. You're not just lazing around because your friends want to go, you know, bowling. You're an artist. You have to live an artist's life.
Millennials bowl? I can hard enough to find a bowling alley. Let me ask you something about a short, though. Marketing a short. This is a what do you do? You put all this money into one thing. It's a short. Where do you get shorts anymore? Where do you see shorts anymore? Where's the market? Is it on some cable? Do they just stick it in somewhere? Or are they in theaters before? I mean, theaters are so weird now.
I don't see it being a profitable enterprise. What it is an artistic and creative endeavor where I've been allowed to write something that I get to write and produce and direct. And someone else is going to bring all the financial wherewithal. I'm not paying for tape. I'm not paying for the lighting. I'm not paying for the camera rentals. And I have unbelievable people.
So it's a giant demo for something? I mean, how are you to market it? You're going to do it though, right?
What I do is I'm saying, as I said, I have figured out what the rest of the movie is. Uh-huh. So I have a treatment. Then what I would do is I'd shop this short to financiers and say, I want to direct this.
Okay.
Here's my short. This is what, and once they see this, they'll go, oh, this guy's serious. And believe me, we have slow motion cameras. I have smoke machines. I've asked for the world and I'm getting them because I have very specific ideas about how I want to do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, right down to the smoke machine. That's great. I mean, to get all that stuff, get that cooperation to be able to produce something like that. That's why I was wondering, what's the function of doing a short like this? But if it's something that will lead to greater projects, right?
We take short and we plan to go to about 50 festivals worldwide.
Okay. Well, there's the first thing. Festivals for attention, for criticism, for exposure, right?
If you get some excellent coverage on your and reviews, or win some awards, you can put that on your little DVD box. And as you go around to the investors and say, hey, the short won a bunch of awards. I'm associated with so-and-so and so-and-so. We want to do a feature. Here's the demo for the film.
Mm-hmm.
Then they'll know, well, this guy can actually direct. The writing is fine. I'm willing to take a chance on a low-budget film, you know, because I could do this film for like $1 million.
Well, I remember when $1 million was, it's nothing now. I remember when $1 million was something. But, so I'm giving you a chance to chew and swallow. It's okay there. While we talk here, we're with Kim Delgado and, Charles, who's decided to stuff his face off mic. With the CEO of Foo Dog Productions over there. Did you cook? You guys cook together? Or did you just need an assistant? That's how good a cook.
I met Charles swimming in a pool that it was the former house of Sybil Shepherd. And, I was.
What was he doing in the former house of Sybil Shepherd?
Well, there was a big party. This woman was a producer and,
a party.
She had this big party, and I was butt-launching children, like basketball three-pointers in from one end of the pool to the other, and wow. I was having a blast. My kids were there,
uh-huh.
And I was butt-launching this little girl, and she was adorable. And eventually, she swam over to this man, and this was her father, and that is how I was introduced to
you were introduced to Charles Dennis at a butt launching session, and one of them turned out.
Kim Delgado played Garvey Rogers in Hard Four. He was the escaped convict who generates much plot.
Yes, that's a, right.
And with the chicanery a couple years later, I said, I feel badly that he was a murderer and he was in an orange jumpsuit, so I made him a cop in chicanery. And detective. And now in Atwell at Large, he has a very intriguing role. For the first season, he was only known as the Desperate Man. We didn't know if he had a name. But this season, we find out that the Desperate Man is Cornell Gates.
I like the name.
You like the name, Cornell. When you have a great name like you have, it's hard to find another great name. Kim Delgado, how do you know, where you going to play somebody who's going to have the name. What name did you like again? What's his name again?
Cornell Gates.
Cornell Gates.
And in the chicanery, he was Desmond Cobb.
I like Cornell Gates, right. You're right, Kim. That's okay. A better.
But I find a great synergy working with Charles. Over 40 years, I've worked with Oscar winners, mm-hmm. Tony winners, Emmy winners. And I just find he's very pleasant, he's really smart, and he's very direct in what he wants. He knows what he wants. And shooting this new thing, Charles doesn't waste time. First of all, he's an innovator. He's shooting an entire series on an iPad. It is amazing.
I know, we were the first to cover that, and that was the revolutionary thing. It doesn't affect how you act, whether it's a big camera, video camera, or a film camera, 16mm, 35-70, right? You actors don't really care, and yet directors have to decide how the effect of it, right, Charles?
He told his class that he never felt as liberated as an actor as he did working on chicanery with the iPad, because he wasn't intimidated by all the equipment and people saying, you got to stand here, no, the light's not on you.
See, it does affect that.
Face to the iPad.
It is amazing that Charles is able to light and shoot an entire show the way he does it, in the amount of time he does. I've spent time, 2 and 3 days, for 1.5 pages, and Charles gets all his angles and gets it done in a couple hours, and we're out of there, which is actually fantastic for the actor.
An hour.
One of the problems actors have that people don't know, we're expected to be robotons or robots, because if you're a star, they'll give you 50 takes. If you're a working professional like myself, they expect you to come in and hit it. You do one for sound, one for camera, and you're out of there. Maybe they give you two. Even as a guest star, they're shooting two shots because they're featuring the lead actor of the show. Mm-hmm. So you better come in and be ready. There's no rehearsal. There's no warm up. You go and you kick ass, or they're going to go, why do we hire this guy? So it's very difficult because the training, I studied with Lee Strasberg, Sandra Seacat, really great, artists taught me, and you want the time to be able to develop what you're doing. Even if it's 5 lines, you want your character to be really strong and full and vivid and colorful. That's not what they want. They want you to say the lines, look the part, and get the hell out of the stage. Mm-hmm. Go, we're moving on.
Right.
I mean, it's $12,000 every 6 minutes to shoot a network television show. So they're not wasting time, and they don't want some actor that doesn't know your lines. I mean, the boom operator can drop the boom in the shot 5 times. The camera operator can miss the zoom 5 times.
Right.
The grip can miss the dolly move 5 times. But if an actor misses his line 5 times, they're ready to fire you because, you're just an actor. You're supposed to be able to do that.
Right.
And the pressure is enormous when they're saying, find your light, don't rustle your tie because the mic is, it's a silk tie and it's making noise. Find your light, hit this mark, turn here on this line. Oh, by the way, be spontaneous and interact with the other actor. By the way, there's no actor there because the star went in the trailer and you're looking at some background person trying to conjure up the same emotions you'd have for the actor that was supposed to be in the place. So it's very difficult nowadays for actors to go out and do their craft because they're trained. Oh, you got, you know, do the right thing. They don't give you the time.
But you say nowadays, and I remember being on countless sets in the 80s, television sets. Yeah, sets, not television sets, but I mean on the set. And it was always very much like that. Come in, know your lines, come in, and get out. I mean, get it done here, master shot. I mean, as you know, and then back shot, two shot, and just do it. And let's get going here because time is money. And matter of fact, in those days when they used to say, you said you were in California during the 80s. That's what I'm talking about. People always want, directors always wanted to get movies because it was like, oh man, I'm just a traffic cop here. You know, that's what they used to call. I'm a traffic. Okay, bring in that guy. Is he in the scene? And you're right. And all the frustrations of everything went on to the actor. It was like, just say it and get the hell out of here. Right. So this is.
Back in the days when I was doing a lot of sitcoms.
But it's not the same now, is it? I mean, you're telling me stuff that sounds very much like it was back then, regardless of the technology or the time difference.
The technology has changed. It's okay if you're doing a webisode show, but if you're on a network show, they're looking to feature their stars, and that's who they're pushing in their character development. The story is supposed to carry the stars, not the other way around. The stars and the characters are who the people come back to see every week. Mm-hmm. So that's who they're pandering to. And that's why if you look at some of the guest stars, unless it's a big role, they're in two shots, three shots. They don't, you know, they may do a single once in a while. They don't want to spend the time and money. They'd rather do the reaction on the star.
Mm-hmm. Frank, can I interrupt for a second?
Anytime you want to interrupt.
Of course.
Oh, okay. Please excuse me. I have to get the next course ready.
Oh, okay. Sure. Did you finish that in our conversation? Did you finish your plate? Did he finish his plate there? How about you, Charles? Did you finish your plate?
Okay. I had my salad and it was superb.
So it's a salad. Now there's going to be a main course? Is that just a salad?
Yes, yes. That was a white fish salad. He described it.
I know.
Now, this shrimp dish that I would have to try to show that to as well.
Yeah, that's good. That's bad on the cholesterol, but it's good.
Tola Chronicles having a gourmet meal served and eaten on the show.
I want everybody to go away from this show feeling hungry for everything, for pop culture, for acting, for doing anything, and for food, because I wish they could see it.
I want to show Ulrika your shirt so she doesn't think you're in your undershirt.
You want to show you? Okay, here we go. Here's the shirt. It's a look at that. It's a crazy piece of art. See it?
I love it. Okay. It's awesome. Fabulous.
Yeah. What? So if it has a picture on it, it doesn't. Yes. It's not an undershirt. It's an undershirt. It just has a picture on it.
Uncle Mario in the backyard, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'm not far from that. So, Charles, I asked you this before, but now we're going to the next segment, next chapter four of At Will at Large.
And the next course of the dinner.
And the next course of the dinner, because you don't have a caterer. That is your caterer right there, right? You bring all the act.
You would pay a fortune for this meal. Man, I know. It's extraordinary.
I know.
We want to open a restaurant and then do a spin-off TV series with him, with celebrity guests. From the restaurant.
Oh. Do you write this thing as you go along? Or is this thing completed somewhere sitting there? I mean, you're going to do changes here and there or whatever, but is this thing a work? Does this thing growing like a person, like a piece of art just grows?
Yeah. I mean, I know what the ending is.
Right.
So and what I'm hoping to do once we finish this season is take the titles off the front and the end and cut it into a feature film, yes, which will be called Barking Mad, because that's what Pat will always
right.
say.
That's, yes.
All the people in Los Angeles, they're barking mad.
I noticed that, he has some great little, British, jargon going on there. You know what else I like, about this? And I've noticed it in a lot of your stuff. And that is that there are these references you make. I wonder who is the best. I think there's demographics that can enjoy your stuff. Except I know if I watch this with my sons or any other millennials or whatever, there's when someone says, It's a Timex. It keeps on ticking. I noticed that line about Timex. And I like, what the hell are you talking about? I mean, I like the references, and I think people of our age are like, and I'll tell you the other, even Watergate and Nixon, although these days people are hearing more about that than if they didn't. But Timex got me, the reference of the Bay of Pigs in chapter 3, which.
Weren't those guys great, the Cubans?
The lines are great. You know, I'm just wondering about how this might be going over some people's heads. And the Jeepers Creepers, I liked a bunch.
I did this whole episode backwards because I said to myself, I saw that movie when I was a kid with my brother Macy, who loves racing. And I saw Louis Armstrong with that horse. And he played the number and the horse would whinny and sing along with him, you know. And I just love that song. And of course, YouTube has brought us back to all these incredible recordings. And if they're old enough, I can use the music and YouTube doesn't freeze me.
Right. I was going to ask you about that too, about, Maxwell Sterling. And I mean, how are you dealing with this music and Maxwell and original?
He's brilliant. He's 26 years old. Maybe I put a year on him by accident. I hope not. He's from Manchester, England. And he's just a brilliant, gifted composer.
What are they, killing the shrimp right there? What are they doing?
Can you see it?
Oh, it's already in your, oh, it's already in a dish in front of you. Yes, I can. Too bad you people can't see this. This is the one time you'd want television with me to see the food that is being served in the Dennis household.
It's served by Kim Delgado. Hold on.
Kim, look at this. Oh, wow. You should, is that, do, am I going to, I'm going to be starving at the end of this. It'll be 11 o'clock here in the East and I'm, shouldn't be putting stuff into my stomach. But, so I wanted, so the references, I think, you know, there's no way to get out of them. I just think that, you know, watching this with younger people, because, I hang out with a lot of younger people and I find myself going, hey, that's a song, there's a guy, and then the next thing you know, you're teaching a course on, you know, jazz and Louis Armstrong and whatever. Jeepers Creepers. You mean it's a, so, what? That's a.
No, what I wanted to say was, it's the only time the song has dictated the plot. I wanted to use the song.
Yeah.
So I came up with the idea that they had called Apple Jeepers Creepers. So there'd be a payoff to have the song.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We did that also last season with the Lotta Lenya singing some song from, it wasn't Thrupp in the Office, another of the Brecht Weil shows.
Who wears Timex anymore? Hey, Kim, do you have a Timex watch?
I do. I have a Timex.
You both have Timex. Ah, it's a praise. A moment of silence now for John Cameron Swayze, please.
Wearing a Rolex.
A moment of silence for John Cameron Swayze, whose hearts...
Crazy downtown.
Whose heart did not keep on ticking.
Takes the licking and keeps you on the chat.
There they are. They're drinking to it. They're drinking to the marvel of being able to live this life doing what they do. I think it's great. I think it's terrific. I never worked a day in my life, some way or another. I was like, you guys.
You have to pay the dues.
No, what about the racing? Oh, Mr. Cotolo is the master of
Oh, we should go to the races. I love it.
Well, we should.
Friends, New York. I love Belmont in New York. And out here, I love Santa Anita.
Oh, well, you know, I used to, you know, it's all gone. I mean, Hollywood Park's a mausoleum. I used to hang out there all the time. What?
Contemporaries, nobody I ever speak to seems to remember the Jamaica racetrack.
Right? Things are disappearing quickly. Like, just like that food is in your mouth disappearing. Oh God. I'm having one of those, you know, that thing where your visual affects your, another sensation. I forgot what they call that. Visual affects your taste.
Tell them how you prepared this. It's amazing.
This is a Meunier sauce.
Okay. Define that for people who don't know anything. Well, like most of the people who listen to me.
Tomatoes sauteed. Fresh parsley,
okay.
Removed, butter, little pepper, salt, and some pepper flakes. And
It's over pan-seared large shrimp that have been sautéed in lemon oil and sea salt. And then I toast the shrimp in the pan, and I pour the sauce over that, and this is spaghetti in the middle, and I put Parmesan cheese that's a very good quality. Oh, it's kind of melts when you pour the hot sauce on it over the pasta. So it's a very nice dish, and you get six shrimp. They're biggie. I don't like little shrimp. They don't like
They're amazing, Frank.
They don't really taste. You can see, your audience can see the shrimp here.
Yeah, I can see it. Hey, yes, yep. That is a scrumptious piece of fish, seafood, I mean.
Maybe one day you'll come over and then feast with us.
I would love to come over. I get very shellfish when I'm eating that stuff, though.
You're in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, I'm no longer where you guys are. I was there for many years and I love it there, but I'm here. So there goes that.
Better in Pennsylvania.
I'm north of the capital. Speaking of capitals, what's the capital of Pennsylvania? Anyone know?
Harrisburg.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Dennis. I'm north, headed towards the mountains, right near a very big army base called Indiantown Gap, where we hear bombs fall and helicopters and jets go over the Green Mountains range. Thank you very much. This is Cotolo Chronicles. We're here for another, at least almost a half hour here with the I'm telling you, if you're not starving just hearing about this, because you're not seeing what's going on here, Mr. Kim Delgado, I want to know one thing. He's a master cook, chef. I don't want to call him cook. That's really that's derogative, isn't it? When you make food the way you food, and I say he's a cook.
A tramp steamer.
Huh?
This is not a tramp steamer.
Exactly. You don't call a man who makes this stuff a cook. He's a cook, ladies and gentlemen. No. Or as if you, I can do my chef's imitation of the Chinese guy on the boat in King Kong, but we won't go into that.
Jeez.
Here's what we're going to go into.
I thought Bob Fitzgerald and Seymour cooking. They dragged him out of the ship and he got eaten by the shark. Oh, God.
What? Yeah. Where did all these ingredients come from? Kim Delgado comes over to your house and you just happen to have all of these exotic things in the cupboard? Or did you guys go out and shop for this?
Rika had bought whitefish for us a couple of days ago. Kim heard about it, so we incorporated it into the salad. But he knows where to shop.
I bring my own stuff, and that way you're not wondering, do they have this dinner? This is really weird. We had saffron garlic bread, pan-seared swordfish with a porcini mushroom, Madeira reduction.
Right. I mean, it's not like... I mean... it's like, so I'm thinking to myself, unless, hey, Kim, come on over, and then you just run to the dentist cupboard, your cupboard there, and it's like, oh, yeah, here's that Mongolian leaf sauce I was wanted. And, of course, you have some diocolic greens that we want to put on. You have to bring the stuff over.
The mobile chef.
I mean, what do you have in your cupboard and in your refrigerator when that Kim Delgado was not around? Hot dogs and beans or what?
My shopping spree, when I go out, I buy Himalayan sea salt, black Hawaiian sea salt.
I thought you'd be better.
Yeah.
No.
The Himalayan sea salt.
I'm serious.
And you can't get that at Ralph's, can you?
No. But you can get it from Trader Joe's. They have Himalayan, and they also have saffron. When you go to Ross and when you go to Marshall's, they have a lot of spices and oils that are about a third of the price that you would pay if you go to some of the big retailers or some of the big delis. For instance, I bought truffle oil, which I used on my last salad.
Oh, my God, truffle. Yeah,
I was here. And it was like $19 for the bottle.
Right, truffles, gigantically priced.
So I saw it at Marshall's for $4.99.
Get it?
I bought two bottles.
Same bottle.
I bought two bottles.
Wow.
So when I shop, if I see stuff like smoked paprika, I got to buy two of those because I love smoked paprika. I have a very well-stocked spice and oils and condiments, but you'll never know when you're going to use them. For instance,
I saw pickled baby corn. Pickled baby corn in tarragon vinegar. Oh. And I said, wow, let me try this. And I've used them on the salads, and they were crunchy and crisp, but they had this vinegary tarragon taste, and they countered what I put in the salad so nicely. So I have...
What was that? What did you have in the salad?
Oh, in that salad, I had these... how can I put it? They're slightly sauteed, not figs. I used, I can see them there. Oh, Turkish apricots.
Turkish apricots. Turkish apricots.
Know that there were such things.
The only thing I ever bought over the counter, that Turkish taffy, you know, is the only thing I ever bought.
They're moist, and when you saute them, I had them with the corn, which was briny and crisp against those soft, almost like buttery apricots in the salad. It was great.
I love how chefs talk. I got news for you guys. I've gained 10 pounds just having this conversation, for the past half hour. And I love it. And I'm still hungry.
8 o'clock last week, when Ulrika's friend Anne was here.
And boy, was she cute and adorable.
But she's also a chef. And these two, I mean, they sat talking. It was like X-rated about food.
And I know. It is literally.
When someone says you use truffle oil on this, I go, oh.
It's
250 bucks a pound. There's a woman.
There's a woman in
Santa Barbara that opened a Italian restaurant, and she goes truffle hunting, and they, you know, you use pigs to find truffle.
Yeah, yeah.
They have like 8 or 9 expert pigs. They're experts at finding truffle.
You need pigs to eat them too.
Well, no, they don't get to eat them, but they're given treats that are not the truffles because each truffle is worth hundreds of dollars.
I know.
So they found a truffle that was worth $1,000. That's how big it was. Mm-hmm. And they weren't allowed to keep it because in the contract it says anything over X amount of ounces goes to the people that are doing the truffle hunt. And they got to keep the big truffle. But, you know, you get, because they got that, then they make a great meal. And the chefs, you know, turn out, you know, truffle this, truffle that, and it's pretty amazing. But I bought black truffle oil and white truffle oil, and I think the white truffle oil is a finer taste, but the black truffle oil is more expensive.
I got to tell you, I'll be out somewhere, and suddenly my phone is a thing for a text. There's a picture there of food, and it's Delgado sending me pictures of what he made the night before, and I'm like, well, it's pretty. Now instead of dying, I want everything ever cooked.
You know what I love about chefs too is that they're the presentation of their food is as important. Now, is it as important? I mean, it's not, but it's part of the whole deal. You don't just slop a bunch of great food and all this exotic stuff on a plate, right? How you place it, where you put the tastes, it's an art.
I would say that one of the greatest. When I went to chef school, one of the greatest things they taught me was plating. Because you can have a crappy dish and you plate it beautiful and people think it's great because it looks great.
Right.
Really, to the person who's in the know about food and the taste of food, it's not just the taste, it's the texture. Is there a crunch on your shrimp or on the crispy crust? Is your cookie crust for your little tartlet still buttery crisp when you bite into it, or has the creme-filled filling made it soft? You want it to be crisp when you serve it, and the berries to have a snap on their skin if you're using blueberries. Or you want it to be.
Has your chewing gum lost its place in the bedpost overnight?
Right.
You know, I have an entire composition book that just has titles of books I'd like to write. And I did an entire show once.
A movie that I want to see, and I'm surprised we've never talked about it, which is Chef School. Is it a funny movie?
I never heard it. Is it?
It's hilarious. Chefs are megalo egomaniacs. Right? They are the worst narcissists besides actors I've ever seen.
Because you just gave me a title for, it's going into my book of titles. You know, you can live 100 lifetimes. I'll never write these books. They're books I want to write. But you, every once in a while, I hear a phrase and I enter it into my book of titles of books I will never be able to live long enough to write. And one of them you just came up with, and we're going to give you a credit for this. Is There a Crunch on Your Shrimp by Frank Atolo? That's in my book. It's in my book of titles now.
You know, you kind of look like Seymour Cassell from here.
Like who?
Seymour Cassell. He's an actor.
Seymour?
From the John Cass, early Cassavetes show.
Cassell?
C-A-S-S-E-L-L.
Which early? What, Chinese bookie or what? What's early?
So I think he goes right back to Faces.
Oh, he's done a ton of stuff.
With Jana Rowlands and
really? I'm going to look this guy up here. I look like him.
Well, he and Jenna Rowland starred. They co-starred in one of those.
Last movie that I saw him in was Reach for Me.
I don't know. I mean, I probably have seen him. I just don't know him as a, right? I would never be able to identify him. It's amazing.
More. He was,
you would know who he is if you saw him.
Yeah.
He's done your movies.
All right. You'd know right away.
Okay, that's the first time anyone's ever told me I look like Seymour Cassell, but it's probably because I didn't look like Seymour Cassell when I was 30. Now I look like Seymour Cassell. And that, in fact, I'm going to use his name on that book. Is There a Crunch on Your Shrimp by Seymour Cassell? We're here for at least another 10 minutes with these guys. And with the off screen, although everybody's off screen to you, CEO of Food Dog Productions. And of course,
Vingsbo. Have you seen the Vingsbo?
They speak their own language. Hi, I wish everyone could see you. You look lovely behind those electric candles.
I beg your pardon.
Aren't they? Which happens to be the name of my next book, You Look Lovely Behind Those Electric Candles, by Frank Atolo.
I would put it down. If I were a producer, I'd say, no, we're going to call it Electric Candle.
Call it what?
Electric Candle.
Just Electric Candles, you say. Yeah, but if it's a book, we could do, because books have two titles now. Or, right, you know, if you have a short title like that, Electric Candles, : the beauty behind the women who stand between the electric candles.
Well, you know, in the Atwell series that Charles has, that he's directing and writing.
Atwell at Large.
Atwell at Large, now available, part three, the other parts.
There's a gentleman named Neil Dixon.
Neil, we wanted him on tonight. Neil's going to be on again soon. Sure.
Neil's fantastic. He has this British aura.
Yes.
And he's so good, and it's like pure. He doesn't have to act. He just is. And I really enjoy the fact that he's that guy. He's that guy.
Oh, yeah.
So it's very easy for Charles to direct him because he just has to come on.
He's easy to write for.
Right. Very easy. But he's a wonderful actor, and he's got some other people in there. Now, there's a guy named Laskin. And I'm in now.
Oh, Michael Laskin, sure. You were in the kitchen when you haven't gotten the, you didn't get the,
but I
the memo.
Am a big fan of Michael Laskin. I saw him in a play that Charles wrote.
Sure.
And I was blown away. I said, holy shit, this guy should be a star. What the hell is he doing not being on TV? Who the hell is his agent? This guy's brilliant. I went.
If he was in France, he'd be the biggest star.
You know, he talked to me about being in this Adam Sandler film, and then they cut the hell out of it until he had like three lines. He was on it for 2 days. You know, he did such great work. Just goes to show you how dumb Adam Sandler is, kicking him off a movie, or cutting him out of a movie.
Right? Well, that happens all the time. I was in Kindergarten Cop, and I worked 2.5 weeks, and I ended up with one line.
Yeah.
And you got the residuals.
Oh, I get the residuals. I must say that I am grateful to Screen Actors Guild and AFTRA for getting my residuals. Being able to be a professional union member has given me pensions, and it's allowed me to be a professional performing artist. It's very difficult for the artists today, the kids coming up, to get pensions and to get set up so that they know when they get older that they'll be taken care of. It's a tough business. And I appreciate that the unions actually do something. Now, they don't do everything. You have to go out and get the work. So it doesn't matter if you have an agent or a union if you're not booking or you're not getting out, because then you're not going to be getting any of the money. And unfortunately, it's a business like any other, and you have to work at it continually. And I tell my students, hey, you have to live your life as an artist. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, but Michael Laskin still should have been in that movie a lot longer. Now, regardless of everything you're saying being true, I agree with you. It's like, you know, he gets a makes the perfect pick, you know, of this guy, and he's a great actor, and it's bad enough he's got to do all these Adam Sandler lines, or what, whoever wrote the garbage. And then here's Michael Laskin, right? And then what do? They cut him out. You know why they cut him out? They cut him out because they went like, God, compared to everybody, he's so good. Give him one line and get and the royalties and get the hell out of here, you know?
Well, you got to understand, nowadays...
No, I don't. I think I'm pissed off.
What I tell my students is, it's not so much going in there and blowing them away, because you could be too good. Now, you know, back in the 40s, the 50s, they surrounded the stars with brilliant actors, mm-hmm. because they were really good. As the actors got more and more commercial and it was more and more a look, the surrounding people weren't as good, the supporting actors, because they were too good. They stole the scenes. They were too charactery. They were too interesting. So they used lesser and lesser people around them to make the star look great. And that is an issue. So I had to learn over a period of 40 years, it's not necessarily me going in there and blowing them away. It's me going in there and finding a niche for the part that I'm auditioning for. And that takes years and years of experience to figure out what the director really wants and what the producer, what they're really going to hire. And you don't know. Even if you do a great job, you have no clue why you didn't get the role.
Charles made a great face when you said what the director really wants. What were you thinking, Charles?
We can just count it over here.
Oh, he's thinking food. That's what he was thinking. Oh, say, Kim.
We're putting on one candle.
It's different working with Charles because he's done extensive acting, voiceovers, stage, you know, video games. He has a great...
I was with Shipstead and Johnson's Holiday on Ice for several seasons until my voice changed.
I'm sorry, but that game production went away a long time ago, Charles. We want to talk about your current work.
Of Mice and Men and Men. Oh, my God, was it good. Lenny.
So he's very versatile. I'll give him that. Now, hopefully my next meal that I make over here, I can make something. I'm going to get Charles a grill. He doesn't have a grill. And we're in California. I grill in my underwear in December.
Really? You don't have a grill, huh?
No grill.
I love that reading.
No. You have a grill?
No. I can do a little bit here and there.
You really got a grill outside the barn there?
I really don't have a grill. I've gone through grills. I've gone through more grills, you know, than most things.
Now, are you a charcoal man or do you go with gas?
No, we charcoal it. I don't have a big gas. No, we do really down dirty. Sometimes we just burn wood, an old chair, and then cook over it.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of the people that have moved from other countries that come in and say, yeah, I'm going to do a barbecue. No, what I say is, and there's a gentleman named Gerald Tinker. He was an Olympic gold medalist. I've written his life story called Dreams of Gold. In 72, he won a gold medal. He also played for the Atlanta Falcons and the Packers. And
he has a grill? He has a grill? How did he come into this?
He's from the South.
His ribs were, I mean,
he,
no offense.
He's beef ribs. I use baby back. There's a big difference in the way we do our stuff. He smokes his ribs with charcoal and, you know, the barrel style. My thing is, and I bet him money and took money from him. He bit me in the arm when he lost this cook.
He bit you in the arm?
No, he bit me in the arm. He had drank a bottle of vodka, and when he lost, he bit me in the arm.
Those are the worst kind of bites, human bites, you know.
I had to get a tennis shot.
Yeah.
He was mad because I use a propane grill, but I use wood chips. And my thing is, I don't have to spend 5 hours doing my stuff. I can do it in a third of the time you do it, and I can get it to taste even better because my wood chips, when I'm using, here you go, when I'm using hickory or if I use mesquite, the smokiness of that and the burn on it, I marinate my stuff and spice my stuff so well that once you get the burn and the char with the smokiness of the burnt wood, I'm sorry, it's as good or better than anything you can do with charcoal.
How long is chef school that you learned all this stuff? How many years is chef school?
The school was 2 years to become a saucier chef, and then another smattering of classes for sushi and pasta and this, that, and the other. And then it's really cooking. That's what teaches you, and eating. I've been to Spain, Portugal, South America, you know, the Caribbean, now all over the United States, and pretty much now if I eat something, I can tell what's in it, or if I don't know and I find out, I can recreate the dish. I think that what's harder to recreate is the pastry crust or some sort of exotic cake. I mean, I do pastries like pine nut crusted. A good cake would be upside down strawberry coconut pie with Belgian chocolate, black bottom, and whole wheat crust with praline whipped cream. Uh-huh. I mean, that's a unique fruit dessert. My mother was an extraordinary chef. And when I was a little kid, we used to listen to Julia Child. We watched Channel 13 in New York.
James Beard, remember him?
It was James Beard, but we'd watch The Galloping Gourmet.
Oh, wow, Graham Chapman, yes. I remember him.
We would listen to Art Linkletter, and they'd have chefs come on, and she would write all the recipes down.
Uh-huh.
My mom would literally make stuff all over the world.
Graham,
you know, rock lamb, couscous, Chinese stuff. I mean, she was really good. So when we were kids, when I was in like seventh grade, I had brothers who were a little older than me, 3 years and 5 years. And she said, okay, for the next 6 months, we're going to rotate, and you kids are going to learn how to cook. You're going to pick a meal that you like, and you're going to make it. And we're going to do this once a month. So my first meal, I guess, was fried chicken, mashed potatoes, biscuits, and I liked the strawberry rhubarb pie she made. So I made that. My brother liked pork chops, double stuffed pork chops with apple stuffing and popover muffins.
Oh my God.
My other brother,
we're going to have to do a whole, I hate to interrupt you, we're going to have to do a whole show or talk more about cooking because we're running out. I got another show on my back here ready to go.
Let me remind everyone before we go off the air, go to YouTube.
That's right.
And type in @will, @will at large, or go to the Food Dog Productions channel on YouTube and see all the episodes.
At Cotola,
IMDb and see Charles Dennis.
Yes, and at if you go to CotolaChronicles.blogspot.com, you can click and go to the food place and get all the episodes. They know where to go from there. And we're going to continue this as we go on, and we're going to get Neil back, and you invited back anytime, Mr. Delgado. Let's drink to your food and to the CEO and the lady between the electric candles.
Roof, 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 roof.
Thank you very much. Let's do this again soon. And let's get those numbers up. Let's get people watching. Thank you, Chaz.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Ken. Bye, Frank.
And there they go. And as they go, what do we got to do? We got to do this because we're getting ready for the other thing, right? Yes. The other thing being, on most stations, Tom Savino coming up with Savino Veritas. In the meantime, in between time, my name is Frank Cotola, man whose name adorns the title of the show. Thank you, Charles Dennis, Brent Huff, Kim Delgado, and the CEO of Food Dog, lady between the electric candles. We'll be back next week, maybe Brock and whoever else. We're going to do a lot of stuff. This summer will be a great summer because we said it, so it must be so. My name is Frank Cotola. My name is the title of the show. Good night, everybody. Good night. Good day. Good afternoon. Whenever you're listening, go to all the stations, listen, do things, and support independent radio, especially this kind. Good night, Mrs. Ernstwhile, wherever you may be located. And the sound seems okay now, right? It's all in place, and we got to go. That's the way it happens. And we've talked a lot. We've eaten a lot and talked about a lot, but right now I'm going because I have nothing more to say.